Davidson here with the Rotobond podcast on a Tuesday, so it's waiver wire day. That was the American Analog Set bringing us in with a song called Punk as Fuck. They're an old band, not really together anymore, but man, they did some good stuff. If you ever want to go check them out, that song is one of my favorites. And as the song says, I am on your side, at least as best I can. Might be able to hear it in my voice. I've taken some drugs, so hopefully I'm coming through a little bit clean on the vocal cords. But my wife was kind enough to give me this bug that she's been fighting off for the last couple days, and now it's my turn. So this might be a little bit of an abbreviated pod, but I'll do my best to get out all of the particulars, all the really important stuff. Obviously, we have had ourselves quite a couple of days in the NFL. We got a lot to unpack, so we're going to go through some of the details, and then I'll go through some of the pickups. It's early in the day. I'm really going to sort of put the screws to this article once I'm done with the podcast. I'm doing it early because, again, there's construction outside my house. And really, I'm always probably going to do this pretty early because it's the time of day I have where I can actually do a podcast. But as I've mentioned many times, the end of the pod is not by any means the end of my work with free agency on a weekly basis. So let's work through this. Let's talk about a lot of what went down, and then let's talk about how we're going to deal with it. Okay, so first of all, we got to deal with Saquon Barkley. Left the game early, didn't finish the first half. It's a high ankle sprain. He's out for 1 to 2 months. I think the idea that he'll be back in 4 weeks is probably, well, it's pretty optimistic. I think if we're lucky, we get somewhere in the middle of this range. I think six weeks would be lucky based on, you know, high ankle sprain, walking boot. But we'll just have to go from there. Look, it's an absolute gut shot to anybody who's relying on Barkley. I have a team that was really riding pretty high that is now probably going to die because Barkley was really at the center of it. It was an orphan team that I took over. So I'm going to have to sort of really look at that team and decide where I want to go with it. I'm not going to really make any big deals, I don't think. It's a weird team because a lot of the players aren't my players and stuff, but I digress. So the Barkley thing we're going to have to deal with. Gallman's the guy now, but we don't know. I mean, it's very, I would say, likely in the next 48 hours that the Giants add a running back. And if it's a guy who we like, it could put a real dent in what some folks are thinking Gallman's going to give them. And look, I think Gallman could give us quite a bit too if he's got like a 2/3 or more role. We'll just have to see how this breaks out. So I think for some people, absolutely Gallman's the guy to go after. He might be the only guy who's really available because, you know, he wasn't rostered in a lot of leagues going into the week. If you're in a deeper league, he may really be the only game in town. So by all means, go after Gallman tonight. Just sort of do it with your eyes open. Damian Williams, obviously, we're not 100% sure if he's coming back this week. Probably about a 50-50 proposition. So that makes the Darrell Williams potential add interesting. And now Darrell Williams, real briefly, I think if you're listening to this podcast, you probably followed some of my content last week, and you know that I took an absolute bath on Darwin Thompson, had like 80% exposure to him, was dumb enough to put him in my cash lineup. Man, did I pay for that. Anyway, hopefully you guys didn't follow me into the breach there. But the funny thing is, going into this week, now we have to sort of reevaluate. The irony is that you guys know this. I've always been like a huge Darrell Williams booster, but you know, I like to say that no matter how much I like a player, I'm not going to, you know, allow the facts on the ground to go unnoticed. I'm not going to go with my gut over what coaches are saying. And when they put Darrell Williams as 4 in the depth chart, I respected that. And I went and played Darwin Thompson. And what do? They play the guy I think they should have been playing the whole time. But this is my life. This is how it goes. So for a lot of you folks, Darrell Williams will be out there. And I think if you play in a deep league, you should absolutely go get him. Again, just to underscore my belief in this player, I already had him rostered on my fishbowl team. I already have him rostered on, I think, all but one of my dynasty teams. And he's on several of my redraft teams as well. This is a player I have a lot of belief in. He's a 3-down back. We saw him do good things in the SEC at LSU. The thing is, we don't know the status of Damian Williams. And don't kid yourself. If Damian Williams is ready to go, it's going to be the Damian and, you know, Shady show for the most part. No matter what we think about LeSean McCoy or Darrell Williams or Darwin Thompson, none of them have the explosivity traits downfield that you get in Damian Williams. He allows them to do things with this scheme the other players simply don't allow. He puts stresses on defenses that the other backs just don't put. Now, does that mean he's going to be the league dog, guy to own, every week starter, even in small leagues? No, we may have a problem here. We may have an RBBC with more than two guys, for all we know. There could be problems in KC. You know, I don't want to sit here and, you know, just blow smoke up everybody's behind. But my inclination is to believe that if Damian Williams is 100%, we will be looking probably at the paradigm we saw in the first two games. So that adds a complication to Darrell Williams. If Damian Williams returns this week, then he probably isn't going to be all that valuable. You sort of have to take that into account when you look at how you're going to do your bids tonight. So just going down this injury list, McCoy also tweaked his ankle a little bit last week, so he's another thing to keep an eye on. That could give us a little bit of an extra window when it comes to Darrell Williams, so that's another thing to keep an eye on. Devin Singletary, keep an eye on him this week, see if he's going to come back. Rashad Penny, probably going to come back this week, but it's something to keep an eye on. Ito Smith was concussed, so he may not be a pickup this week, and we may have to reshake that depth. That depth chart, and Hill could become a viable ad. We'll have him on the wire later today. T.Y. Hilton and his quad, definitely something to monitor. Our guy, Paris Campbell, could become close to an every down player if Hilton is out this week. Who else? Traquan Smith, as it turns out, is going to miss significant time. So Ted Ginn is a viable ad in some leagues. Let me see. Obviously, the situation in Philadelphia with Alshon and D-Jax, both of them could return this week, but we don't know. So that probably isn't a waiver wire thing for tonight, but you don't want to go cutting Aguilar necessarily in smaller leagues just yet. Let me see. Anything else? Vance McDonald, this is a significant one. You may need tight end help. He may not play this week. That's something you might just need to sort of keep on top of the tight end position all week long. But, you know, with Jordan Reed obviously being problematic, with Hunter Henry out for the year, with David Njoku now out probably for like another 7 weeks or so, there could be a little bit of a shortage at the position. So understand you may have a situation with Vance McDonald. And in an absolute pinch, you could grab Grimble off of the Steelers. For McDonald. Now, let's start getting into the individual positions one by one. First up will be the quarterbacks. On my board, Daniel Jones is sort of the guy to go after this week. You have to be impressed with what we saw from Jones. And, you know, if you read my rookie rankings, you know that I didn't really think he sucked. I did think he was a bit of a reach for the Giants at five. I think it was pretty obvious that they were one of the few teams looking at him, and they could have dealt down, made a profit, still got their player. I also think I would have personally taken Haskins. That's just my personal thing. But Jones was never really a bad prospect. I'm not sure why so many people thought he sucked, you know, and I didn't really want to get into a bunch of Twitter wars, so I pretty much stayed low on this. But anybody who, if you guys read my rookie stuff, you know, I think Jones is actually a pretty good prospect. The thing that surprises me is how quickly it's happening. I thought a season to put another 5 or 10 pounds on him would have been a good move. But, you know, the Giants got some of that done in the offseason, and he looked real good. You know, now, was that one game really all the sample we need? No. Jones could easily tank, especially with this mediocre offense and no Barkley. The thing that I like about him as a rookie for fantasy is that this guy has an inclination to run. He didn't do it a whole lot yesterday, but I think he will. And I think you're going to add some foot points on top of things. The Giants do not play a schedule that is fearsome. I think that's a big factor when it comes to, you know, what do we really want to do with Daniel Jones? But when I look at the Giants' schedule, you know, Washington this week, then you got some tough stuff with the, you know, with the Vikings and the Patriots, but then Arizona, Detroit, the Jets week 10, you know, Philadelphia, great throwing matchup week 14, Miami week 15, and the Redskins week 16. So the playoff matchups for Jones are really great. So, you know, obviously we're not going to want to play him against the Minnesota and New England weeks 5 and 6, and we're going to want to avoid Dallas week 9 and the Bears week 12. But apart from that, this is a guy you can probably get some usage out of. So Daniel Jones is viable, and, you know, at some point he's going to get Barkley back. And at that point, if he's doing well, he could then become sort of a supercharged asset. Jacoby Brissett's the next one on the list. He's obviously played well, but they're still sort of playing, fairly low-risk football. But the thing is, good matchups coming up. Oakland, Kansas City, the Texans. I think Brissett might be the best guy to grab along with Jones. And I think for some people, maybe he's just the guy to grab, because you know he's not going to lose his job, and you know the matchups are pretty good going forward. Now, unlike Jones, he doesn't have great playoff matchups. He's got the Saints sitting there in week 15, but he does have Tampa week 14, so there's some benefits. So to me, Brissett is really a guy to go after. It's really not that he blew up this week. You know, I mean, if you look at the wire, we've had Brissett on there every week. It's nice that he threw for 300 yards and a couple touchdowns. But it's really not about that. It's about the fact that he's played well. And really, once he gets T.Y. Hilton back, whether it's this week or next, as we said last week, I think, and we saw some of it in week 3, but I think they're going to continue to raise the A-dot, to let him attack downfield, particularly if they can scheme some things up for him. So, you know, again, Frank Reich is an ex-NFL quarterback. He understands what it's like to be a backup, being thrust into the action. He gets it, and I think he's trying to sort of open up the season like a flower. He wants to let this thing bloom. They're not trying to force things. And I think it's good, and I think it makes Brissett a quality add. Another quality add is Gardner Minshew, he's obviously played really well. As you guys know, I was pretty blown away just by that first week when he got thrown into action. He's looked good since. He's starting to mix in more downfield throws. Foles is going to be out a while. And, at some point, we're going to have to start talking about, is Gardner Minshew the quarterback of the Jaguars now? I mean, if he does what he has done for another 6 weeks, you have a cheap young quarterback. Why would you want to make a change? I mean, who knows how it's going to play out. Foles is not a Romo. He's got career left. So I don't know how this whole thing breaks down. But at some point, if Minshew continues on the course he's on, we're going to have ourselves a quarterback controversy here. Here's the thing, though. Upcoming schedule. We've got the Broncos, not great, but then the Panthers, the Bengals, the Jets, the Texans. This is solid stuff. So there's really only one bad matchup during the byes that he's got, and that's week 6 with the Saints. So Gardner Minshew is a guy who's in a position to help a lot of teams out there as a QB2 or as a second QB in a super flex format or whatever. If he's available on the cheap or as a free agent, I like adding him. Kyle Allen on the Panthers, he's going to start this week again. He gets the Texans, so he's a good grab and play kind of pickup for this week. Sounds like he's got a pretty good chance of starting week 5, maybe even week 6. They want to get Cam Newton right. There's an outside possibility that Newton ends up with getting surgery. If that happens, then Allen could be the quarterback for the rest of the year. So he's definitely a good add. He's a guy who is capable of distributing the football. And he actually can run a little bit, even though we didn't see that last week. Andy Dalton, you're not going to see him on a lot of wires this week. He was so bad, but he's got some good matchups on his schedule. So it's really a matter of when you need a quarterback. But I think look at his schedule, because when the matchups are good, I'm really liking what I see from this offense, just from a process point of view. And there are a lot of quarterbacks you can be picking up this week, folks. I'm not going to go through like 12 of them. But by all means, if there's a different guy that I've mentioned on your wire and you want my opinion, hit me on Twitter. I'll get back to you today. So the last one we're going to look at is Case Keenum and Dwayne Haskins. Now, my gut says they're going to make a switch this week because the matchup is good this week with the Giants. But if it doesn't happen this week, I don't think they'll put Haskins in next week against the Patriots. It'll probably be week 6 when they face the Dolphins. But in deep formats, in QB2s, you know, the time to get Haskins, I think, is probably now. I think his time is coming. And the way the skill players are playing on this team, there's no reason that Haskins can't do well once he gets in there. You know, now you want to pick up Keenum to get you through this week or this week and next week in a deep league. You know, okay, I can see that. But I would prefer Haskins just because I think he's a far superior player. Okay, let's turn this over to the running backs. Okay, now we already talked about some of these guys, but we're just going to go through them one by one quickly here. Again, I want to try to get this podcast honed down to under 40 minutes because I know you guys have to listen to this in time to make waiver moves, and I know some of you guys get there later in the day. So while I'd love to stretch this thing out to well over an hour, it'd be easy to do. I want it to be something that can be consumed in time to make it useful. Hence the shorter time frame. Gallman, again, I think he's easily going to be top of most waiver boards. But I also think it's important to look at him for what he probably is, which is a guy who will be either in an even committee, maybe leading a committee, maybe slightly second fiddle in a committee over the next 4 to 8 weeks, depending on who the Giants bring in. So, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, I think a lot of people want to talk about Gallman like he's a total dog. I don't think that's fair. He's just not a guy who's going to do a ton on his own. He will, you know, get what's blocked and he can catch the football a little bit. So, you know, Gallman could end up being a pretty good ad if the Giants for some reason decide to just let him be the guy. I just feel like there's a less than 50% chance of that. Ronald Jones is the next guy up, and I know some of you are probably rolling your eyes. I get it. But in my defense, he looked pretty good again last week. So we don't know what Arians is going to do on a week-to-week basis, which makes us a tough player to roster. I get that. The thing is, if we accept that Arians is very good at what he does, and I think it would be silly not to, and if we accept that Winston, while he has flaws, is a quarterback who can deliver a football, if we accept that Godwin and Evans are very good receivers, if we can accept that O.J. Howard is going to get his shit together eventually, and he did flash last week, if we accept all these things, and I think we should, then this is an outstanding platform for a running back. Unfortunately, we don't have a guy who's just locked, loaded, ready, who's a three-down guy. We don't have that guy on this roster. Ogunbowale is a specialist. Barber, as much as I think he's a good player, is a medium fit for this offense, and he's mostly a pounder, is what he is. Jones is a guy who can take creases and turn them into huge plays. He's a guy who can break a tackle and pick up chunk plays. He's a guy who you can isolate in the intermediate range, hit him with a pass, and he can take it to the house. That's an element that can really help this team. The question is, how do they get that element on the field, right? Because Jones is not gifted in pass protection. Though he's, you know, he'll get in there and fight, but he's not great at it. And he is not a smooth receiver. He is not a detailed route runner. Arians is a guy who cares about these things on some level, okay? Some offenses and play callers and coordinators will be like, I don't care. Arians knows why to care about things. So he's not going to cripple them on a play-to-play basis by putting Jones in there. He's been using Jones when they want to use his skill set. So what needs to occur here is Jones needs to become more trustworthy. And I don't want this to be like I'm holding the past against him, because it's not really fair, because he's never been an Arian scheme before. So he's getting better coaching now than he's ever gotten. That's a really good thing, but it doesn't happen in a finger snap. It happens over time. And we've seen that they liked what Jones did in the offseason. He put on weight. It's obvious that he did. He's breaking arm tackles pretty nicely. The question is, can we get this guy in there, say, over 50% of the time, so he can get his, you know, touch rate up into that high teens area where it's predictable? I mean, we don't need this guy to be an alpha dog who plays 80% of the snaps. We don't need that. But we need him to be consistently in that 50 or better area so he can consistently get that 15 or better touch count. So, if it happens, that's the thing. It's an if it happens kind of thing. We don't know it's going to happen. We think it's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen, but we think it's going to happen probably over the next couple weeks. Arians doesn't want to throw the season away, right? He needs to start winning football games. It's important. They don't have much time to mess around here. So I feel like we're starting to see it with Jones. I don't think he's suddenly going to be named the starter this week, although that would be nice. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to continue to. And again, I talked about this last week. This is a player where a smart coach is going to make him earn it. He's going to make him kick the door down because the bugaboo with this player is the details. So if you send a message to him that the details don't matter, you undercut the whole thing. Now, I'm getting into a nickel psychology here. I'm getting a little touchy-feely. I understand that. And you have my apologies. But this is really the way I view this situation. I think Arians, actually, as much as week two was frustrating, I think he's actually got his finger on this thing correctly. So long wind-up for what I'm going to say here, but I think the smartest guy to add in most leagues, not tiny leagues with 10 teams, but in most leagues, I think the smart ad is actually Ronald Jones. Now, is he the best ad for this week? Probably not. Although he might not be as bad as you think, but probably not. There's some risk. But I just think our goal here, and again, if you're an 0-3 team, I understand you're not stashing Ronald Jones. I get that. But if you're a 2-1 team or a 3-0 team or even a 1-2 team and you like your team, and maybe the thing that can get you over the hump is being able to establish a good two-back that you haven't been able to do, then I think Jones is a powerful stash. Okay, I'm done with Jones, but he's such a tough player. That's why this podcast is a good thing, because you can't really just write a blurb about Jones with 3 or 4 sentences and really get it right. He's a player for certain people, for certain teams. He is my kind of ad. Even though I don't love the player, he's my kind of ad, because for the last time, when you put explosiveness like this in Arians' scheme, where they've got a lot of downfield talent, you've got big play potential, lots of it. So I'm putting this guy on benches, maybe even in some lineups if I can find a way to do it without hating it, you know, if I have a bye week or whatever. But Ronald Jones, it's not fun. It's not sexy. It's not the kind of thing you want to go brag to people that you just did. But believe me when I tell you, what we look for are guys who have the ability to turn into weekly starters over the entire season. Because when you find one of those guys in week 3 or 2 or 4 free agency, that's how you win leagues. You win leagues with guys like Ronald Jones. Now, you lose them too, right? But we talk about this a lot. There's 11 ways to lose most leagues and one way to win, right? One team wins. So we can't get caught up in the risks of Ronald Jones. Everybody, 11 out of 12 teams are going to lose. We want to look at him and say, wait a minute, this guy is a pathway to victory. And that's what he is. He's a pathway to victory. Not a guaranteed path, not a skeleton key, not the end-all be-all, but the kind of player who can work because of his talent and the situation he's in. Okay, that's it. Going on to Burkhead, who you guys know I abso-freaking-lutely love. I should repost that Burkhead thing I did a couple years ago. But for those who never heard it, when Burkhead was on the Saints, I said, this guy's better than Gio Bernard, and you know he's better than Jeremy Hill. They should be playing this guy. And of course, they didn't. He went to the Patriots. We all know the story. You know, as I say in the thing, Rex is intriguing because a lot of people are saying it's Rex Burkhead time because the fullback is gone, and now they're going to be playing more, you know, 3 wide, and we're going to see more 11 personnel. We're going to see less of the 21 personnel, that whole thing. And I'm not saying that that's a bunch of crap. I'm just saying that anytime we take one single player and try to extrapolate from that player's situation and then try to sit there and say, this is what Belichick is going to do, I mean, how many times have we ever been right doing that? I mean, it's really got to be a cut and dry thing. I think the Patriots are going to find ways to run the football, even if Devlin was a crucial piece. And I don't know if he was as crucial as everybody says. Clearly, when he was in the game, he was. But we all know the Patriots like to run from different formations. So, yeah, losing Devlin hurts. It doesn't hurt with the vulture touchdowns, but it hurts. But, I mean, do we know that Jacob Johnson isn't going to be good? I mean, they kept him around. You know, a backup fullback isn't generally the kind of thing you keep lying around, and they didn't know Devlin was going to go down. So, I mean, for all we know, they may just end up running a lot behind Jacob Johnson, and this thing might be like a 20% kind of thing. So anyway, the reason to own Burkhead is because he's a good player. He's in the rotation. He's going to give you some solid flex weeks, maybe even an RB2 week here or there. And I have nothing against adding Burkhead. But in shallow 12-team leagues, I think he's on the fringe. I'm not sure that he's a lock add. In deeper leagues, for sure you want Burkhead. For sure. Anyway, let's move down to Darrell Williams. Again, another guy we've talked about already. The key thing to understand with Williams that I may not have mentioned before is that he's a player to own. As I said, I own him everywhere. I already owned him. I didn't need him to get in the game for me to want him on my team because I want any potential big piece in this offense. The offense is so explosive, in my opinion, in any 12-team league. Darwin Thompson should be owned and Darrell Williams should be owned. And obviously Damian and LeSean McCoy need to be owned. So this is pretty easy. You should add McCoy and Williams in deep leagues just because even if he hadn't played last week, you should add him. As for this week, to really know what his role is going to be, we need to know about the other two guys. We don't know yet. Okay, moving down this list, some of these guys will be ranked fairly high. I haven't ranked them yet, but Alexander Mattison, we saw, did a ton last week. Been over this a bunch of times. I'm not going to get into it. He's a great handcuff. And as we saw last week, in blowout type of games, he can have RB 2 weeks. Tony Pollard, same thing. We saw blowout game. He put up more stats than Zeke did. If you're a Zeke team, you got to have Pollard. If you've got deep benches, you play against the Zeke team by rostering Pollard when they don't. So, you know, and again, we go back to what Lord Reeves said on the podcast and what we knew all along before that anyway, that these backs with talent on good teams, even if they're not playing, you've got that anti-fragility appeal. Okay, Frank Gore, you can hang on to him or add him depending on the situation with Singletary's hamstring. And we saw what Chris Thompson can do again last night. Obviously, this has a lot to do with Washington Station, them being in a lot of games where they're trailing, the fact that they don't have a lot of other alternate running backs other than Adrian Peterson. But once again, 5 targets, 4 receptions, 79 yards. He also picked 29 up on the ground. So he had over 100 total yards. This type of performance is going to continue based on two things. The Redskins continuing to be bad, which I think we can count on, and Thompson continuing to be healthy, which we really can't count on. So, as we've been saying, add this guy and ride the wave, enjoy it. He's really for PPR leagues, not so much for standard, but he's a guy you can pick up and who will help you. Moving over to the San Francisco backfield, Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson. Boy, do these guys just bum Matt Breida owners out. Breida ran really well. Once again, pulled on the goal line. Once again, Jeff Wilson getting the money play. And Raheem Mostert, once again, playing a reasonable amount of snaps, 30%, had 10 touches. I have not heard enough people talk about this, though. You know, Mostert is a little undependable. He runs a little bit out of control, which, as I mentioned last week, can lead to injuries. Now, he does it in a good way. He's an exciting runner. He creates energy. They obviously, when they need him, they're more than willing to use him, and he gets some big plays. But you also notice he fumbled a good pitch that was right in his hands from Garoppolo. They got really lucky that that wasn't a turnover because that was inside their own 20, if memory serves. And then he fumbled a ball on the next series that cost him points. So, you know, Mostert is a guy where he's done a lot of good things, but he's also done some bad things that don't get a whole lot of attention. I think that's worth noting. So don't be surprised, when Tevin Coleman comes back, that even though Coleman may not be as exciting as Mostert and Wilson, he's probably going to get a lot of his juice back because he's more dependable and is more than capable of hitting big plays himself. So look, I think picking up Mostert and or Wilson this week makes sense in a horses for courses, you know, pick them up and play them kind of thing. But apart from that, I'm not sure how much long-term value I see. Now, without question, in deeper leagues, you can keep these guys on your bench. I mean, in leagues where you 12 teams or you roster 20 players, absolutely these guys belong on benches, no doubt. Let's go over and talk a little bit about Malcolm Brown. Some of you guys are probably a little annoyed with me about Malcolm Brown last week. Now, the Rams definitely had some trouble moving the football on the ground, which is understandable against Cleveland. And, it wasn't that much of a different week Brown played 26% of the snaps. It's his lowest on the year, but he was 27% week one. There just weren't a lot of snaps to go around. 26% of the Rams' snaps was only 17 snaps. So, not so great. You look over at Gurley, and, you know, he played 75% of the time, roughly. Still only managed 14 touches that only went for 43 yards. Yikes. And he was only targeted once. So, you know, just wasn't a good game at all for the Rams running backs in general. Not a lot of goal line action to get behind. Most of it that occurred this week went to Gurley, and he just didn't look real good with it. But again, this is against Cleveland. I wouldn't really freak out about Gurley or Brown this week. It just wasn't a really good week. No way I would let either one of these guys on the waiver wire. Obviously, Gurley, what am I even saying? But Malcolm Brown looking like a little bit less of a flex option standalone when Gurley's healthy, but he is still an absolute monster if something happens to Gurley. He has to be owned pretty much in all leagues. All right, let's move over. Jalen Samuels didn't play last week. Benny Snell did. I'm not going to read too much into that. Samuels is definitely the more valuable player if something happens to Connor. Let me see. Justice Hill, still a stash for me. Definitely a letdown that he didn't do more, but he's still a stash. Now, granted, if you play in a shallow league, you may have to dump Justice Hill. I understand. You have to make moves. You got injuries you got to deal with. I mean, I would stash him most everywhere with the qualifier that in smaller leagues, you're going to have to let go. It's just the way it is. Some situations, you just don't have the bench space, and that's fine. In deeper leagues, I definitely still recommend hanging on to Hill, stashing him, but at this point, we're waiting to see more playing time. And I mean, what are you going to do? Gus Edwards, he's running well, so, you know, good for Gus Edwards. Let me see, what else on the running backs? It's probably worth noting that we should keep tabs on Justin Jackson. If he gets dropped in any of the mid-sized to bigger leagues, he's a great handcuff. I know some people are probably just sort of looking at his Eckler's backfield, but the truth of the matter is Jackson's getting 30-ish percent of the snaps each week, or a little more. So he's still a guy who could have some standalone value in deeper leagues if you're in need. And he definitely, until Gordon is back, he's got huge handcuff value. All right, we're already over 30 minutes here, so let's jump down to the receivers, hit as many of them as we can. DJ Shark's pretty obvious at this point. He's not my favorite player, but it would be silly to ignore his strengths. He's extremely fast. He's got some quickness to him. He's got a long body. So even though he does like to basket catch and body catch, there are times where because of his size, he can get away with that against smaller corners. Certainly it's not a problem on the deep ball, on those corner throws. And as long as he continues to make these body catches, and they've all been body catches for the most part if you're watching, he'll be okay. I don't ever see this guy becoming an alpha dog. Although, hey, you never know. But definitely, and we said this the whole time. I mean, we saw it at LSU. He's definitely a guy who can make a big play. And they're giving him enough volume where there should be some consistency to it. So as a third receiver in 12-team leagues, I'm cool with DJ Shark. Philip Dorsett, probably not quite as appealing as Shark, although who knows. But I think at this point, he's probably the third receiver in the Patriots. They're going to play a fair amount of three, as they always do. So in games where they're throwing the ball, Dorsett has got excellent chance to score touchdowns. I think in 12-team leagues, he's probably a good bench receiver. And in 14-team leagues, he's probably a starter. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, let's talk about this guy. I'm bringing him up just because he's just a shade over 50% owned on Yahoo, which is crazy. This guy's good. You know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but Valdez-Scantling was always going to have a little bit of a slow start in terms of usage because they've got such a nasty opening schedule. I mean, don't forget, they've played Minnesota and Chicago already, okay? So they've gotten some of the really nasty stuff off of their schedule, and things are gonna get better. And Valdez-Scantling is really looking like the second option at this point. So now they're going to get the Eagles, which is a throw matchup. Then they're going to get the Cowboys, which is mediocre. But then Detroit, that's another throw matchup. Oakland, Kansas City, Carolina week 10, the Giants week 13, the Redskins 14. So now the playoff matchups are horrible. Bears and Minnesota again. But Scantling is a guy who can really help you quite a bit, really now through week 14. So, sucks having bad playoff matchups, but apart from that, this guy is going to help. So I would be adding Scantling anywhere I could for what that's worth. Golden Tate. He's going to be out one more week, but now he's going to come back to a Giants offense that doesn't have Saquon Barkley, that's going to need to throw the ball a ton. He's going to be targeted. Boy, go get Golden Tate right now in full PPR leagues. Nelson Agholor probably has one more week of viability left. Obviously, he's a guy who plays a lot of snaps even when these other receivers are healthy. So I think in deep leagues, Agholor is a guy who should be owned. But you might be able to get one more start out of him. If somebody drops him this week, that could be a good thing. My guy Diontae Johnson scored a touchdown, but more importantly, looked really good. He was, you know, the most, well, you know, the quickest receiver that the Steelers had on the field. I think there's no doubt about that. But after Juju, I think he's the most dangerous. So I think Diontae Johnson is going to be the second receiver in the Steelers going forward. I sort of have felt that all along, as you guys know. Unfortunately, and this is a big one, this is, I really want to get excited about Diontae Johnson. The truth of the matter is Mason Rudolph looked like shit. He looked, how do I want to put that? He looked unconfident. He carried himself like a backup quarterback. He had the body language of a backup quarterback. You know, he got a, you know, you get the fist pumps when he made a big play, but he did not look like he was approaching the game from a standpoint of a confident quarterback. He looked like a guy who had doubts about what he was doing, and it showed on a lot of the throws. Now, look, Rudolph does do some things well. He's not completely devoid of talent. Maybe he will settle in, but of all the quarterbacks that we were looking at with sort of, you know, a speculative eye, like, hey, how good is this guy going to be? I think Rudolph was the one who was shaky. You know, I was pretty impressed with Teddy Bridgewater. And I, as I've said, I've been impressed with Dark Gardner Minshew. You know, and Daniel Jones really stepped up. not so much with Mason Rudolph. So, you know, this is not good. I'll be honest. If I had Juju Smith-Schuster and somebody was offering me a player who went around the same point in the draft and it's a player I like, I would do it. If somebody offered me Mike Evans for Juju, I would do it in 2 seconds. Really, any other healthy receiver who's of wide receiver one caliber, I would switch out now based on what I've seen on Mason Rudolph. Now, I'm not saying panic. I'm not saying sell low on Juju, because hopefully this guy can get his shit together. And Juju did put up some numbers anyway, but let's not kid ourselves. He pretty much did it himself on a run after the catch. We've got some problems here. So I love Diontae, but I am concerned about Mason Rudolph. We're going to have to sort of keep tabs on this. I think Diontae Johnson is startable as a flex if you need him. He's definitely a guy to pick up, but we're going to have to hope that the Steelers quarterback situation improves. And the only way that's really going to happen is if they can get Rudolph a little bit more settled down. Mecole Hardman, you know, obviously a guy you're gonna want to add in any league you can add him in. We don't know how long he's going to be viable, but certainly he's viable one more week. Darius Slayton looked real good on the Giants. Now, we don't know how many receivers they're really going to need, but in deeper leagues, I thought he looked good enough to add. Adam Humphries, you know, he's a guy to really talk about here because his usage, and this is, you know, this is a little bit of a strange one because he's a veteran player and his usage was not good out of the box. I guess they were trying to get him up to speed in the scheme. But if we look at the trend, 36% week one, 57 week two, 68% last week, up to 54 snaps. Now that's significant. That is nearing sort of a regular player. He was targeted 9 times, caught 6 of them for 93 yards. That's after basically doing nothing the first 2 weeks. If you're in a PPR league, I think Adam Humphries is an ad. You know, we'll have to keep monitoring this week to week. Obviously, we've got the rookie who they're going to want to play more. But the truth of the matter is A.J. Brown is sort of holding steady at 50, and Humphries is a little bit on the increase. That's where we stand right now. Now, again, A.J. Brown is a much more explosive player. He is a guy they absolutely have to get going. But I think when you look at this, what's going to happen is Tajay Sharpe is going to end up down around 20% at some point. Brown will probably end up around 70 and Humphries in that same area. But we're just going to have to see how this thing progresses. But the bottom line is Humphries is an ad right now in PPR leagues, and I would continue to stash/add A.J. Brown. And, you know, while we're here, let's talk about Corey Davis for a second. He is nearing 50% ownership in Yahoo, and I understand he hasn't done anything. 38 yards week two, 44 yards last week. Targets haven't been real high. But look, he's leading the team in snaps. He is the number one receiver. They've played Cleveland, where they can lock down guys. They've played the Colts, which is a tough low A-dot defense. And they've played the Jaguars. Obviously can cover a little bit. So I would be careful not to over-penalize Corey Davis for what he's done so far. No way would I let this guy exist on a waiver wire. Snatch him up, put him on your bench if you don't want to start him. I understand he hasn't done enough where you feel good about starting him. This is a very talented player. So I would have him on my bench if I could. And, you know, back over to the RBs just for a second. You know, I didn't mention C.J. Procise, but this is a player. I'm not saying that C.J. Procise is a player to add. There's a whole bunch of reasons why we might not do that. He hasn't been able to hold up the contact well. But he has gotten through a couple games healthy, which is a good sign. It's possible that he's finally gotten his conditioning level. And I don't mean that he was, like, bad wind, but he may have built his body up enough now where he's able to hold up to contact better. I mean, that, who knows? But this is a very talented player. And the way Chris Carson is melting down, he's slipping, he's fumbling the ball. I don't want to say this guy's feeling the pressure, but it's possible. And if it continues to mount, if he feels like he's losing his job, it could get worse. So if for some reason something happens to Carson, if for some reason Rashad Penny, you know, doesn't get healthy with his hamstring, maybe he retweaks it or something, C.J. Procise is in the middle of a situation where he could end up getting a lot of touches. For all we know, he could end up starting. I mean, it's not crazy, right? Again, if Carson implodes and if, you know, Penny doesn't really get healthy, and then what happens if C.J. Procise starts making plays? Because the irony is he's got more talent than the other two backs do. Like, if you look at all three running backs in Seattle, the most talented guy is probably C.J. Procise. Maybe Penny. It's close. They're close. Different players. But C.J. Procise has got a ridiculous total skill set. This guy can run a little bit, but this guy played wide receiver at Notre Dame. I think some of us have forgotten that because, well, let's face it, C.J. Procise has been forgettable. But you know what? This is a player. Look at your team. Look at your situation. Look at your league. Look at the dynamics. But I added him in a league last week preemptively. And now this is a really deep league. But you play in a deep PPR league right now, and C.J. Procise is just sitting there on the wire, and if you've got a roster spot to play with, you know what? Not a bad ad. I mean, only one or two things needs to happen for him to get in there. And, like, just hypothetically, let's just say C.J. Procise was playing 60% of the snaps and is getting most of the passing down work for Seattle. Folks, I mean, he could be a fucking game changer. I mean, a game changer. Now, the odds of this happening are slim, okay? I don't want to start getting people excited about something that's really a low probability happening, but this is a big, talented, fast football player who has got exceptional receiving chops. And I'm not just talking about catching it. I'm talking about running after the catch, running routes, all of this stuff. He's got receiver speed. So he's a special kind of player. If running back is something you're trying to develop, and if you've got the spots, and especially if it's PPR, I really like him as a stash, okay? I really do. So just for what it's worth. And also for other people, yeah, Pete, I don't know, man, Procise, really? I'm not going to stash that guy. Okay, look, I don't blame you. But here's the thing. Keep your eye on him. Keep your eye on the situation. It's one of those keep your head on a swivel things, because if we get injury information on Procise, like on Penny, like he came back, tried to run and retweaked it, or if Carson comes out and puts the ball in the turf twice next week and Penny's not healthy, our guy is going to get thrust into action. So just understand that, and in certain places, in certain situations, this guy makes a lot of sense. I'm not saying add him in all leagues for sure, and I'm not saying add him in small leagues for sure, but for some of us, this guy is, seriously, a guy to, at the very least, pay attention to. Okay. And yeah, we're going long, I know. I'm going to cut the receivers a little bit short here, just real quick on a couple guys. Trey Quinn, looking active, definitely in mid-size to large PPR leagues. I want to be on that guy. Demyere Byrd didn't do anything, but you know what? Crabtree got cut, and Byrd played like all the snaps. So in deeper leagues, he's a guy to roster. And look, there's going to be a lot of other receivers I'm going to talk about. They'll be on the final waiver wire. Final wire today probably is going to be at about 7 p.m. I don't see myself going much later than that because, again, you can hear it in my voice. I'm a little sick. So definitely shoot me questions, but I just want to be clear tonight. If you're shooting me questions, say after 9, pretty good chance they get answered the next day, just so you know. Let's talk about some tight ends here while I'm just going to just, like, we're at 45 minutes. I'm going to get this thing done inside 50, I promise. But a couple words on the tight ends, because some of this stuff is sort of important. Let's start off with Will Dissly. This guy, man. I write him up pretty extensively because he was on the WEI Wire. Most of what you need to know is there, but he's just trending really well. Now, this is a guy we got excited about early last year, for those who remember, just because he looked so good. And then he got hurt early on, and we, you know, basically forgot about him. And, you know, he was rehabbing during the offseason, and not a lot of talk about Dissly because he's going through ACL stuff. But he's out there week one making plays, and, you know, as things have progressed, he's gotten more involved each week. He just looked really good last week. This is a team that needs red zone help. It's a team that needs places to throw the football. You know, I think Herndon is probably the better add once he's back, but Dissly helps you right now. So to me, Dissly and Herndon are at the top of the waiver order for this position, and it's really about what you need. If you need help now, it's Dissly. If you can afford to wait a couple weeks, I think it's Herndon. But really, either one, I think, can be a starter for you as long as they stay healthy the rest of the way. The next guy I want to talk about is Dawson Knox, who we have mentioned before. This is a guy we liked a lot during our offseason process with the rookies. He's played major snaps every week, but as he's gotten healthier because he was dinged up this preseason, his involvement has gone up and up. From 2 targets to 4, 4 targets again, but this time 3 receptions for 67 yards and a touch. He looks good. It's pretty clear that Josh Allen likes him and is going to target him. I tell you what, in deeper leagues, I think Dawson Knox is an ad. I really do. And he may become a player in smaller leagues as well, because this is a fairly depressed position. Now, speaking of it being a depressed position, Jordan Akins, now he played less than 50% of the snaps. A lot of people may tell you to add Fells. I am totally, totally not on that. I think the guy to add is Akins. And not just because he scored 2 touchdowns. I mean, it's really about him just being a better offensive tight end than Darren Fells. We know what Darren Fells is. He's a solid player. He's mostly going to block. But Akins is a guy who's a playmaker. We've seen him score touchdowns before, 2 last week. I think in deeper leagues, he's a guy to add. I really do. Vernon Davis, also viable, maybe even for the rest of the season with Jordan Reed's status. You know, Jason Witten, like I said last week, the corpse of Witten will continue to make plays. Noah Font is playing a lot, enough where I would target him in deeper leagues. Now, he did have a bad strip fumble last week, and I'd like to see him play with a little more intensity. But overall, I think Fant is a guy to consider in deeper leagues because he's playing enough, and he could end up becoming a weekly starter at some point. Now, I definitely have a lot of guys in addition to this group that I'm going to get into. When I start writing up the Rotobon Expanded Wire, which I'm going to do pretty much right now when I shut down this pod, you'll see the Rotobon Expanded Wire waiver wire probably going up between 1:30 and 2:30. And then from that point, it'll probably be updated about once an hour up until about 7 p.m. So that's pretty much it with the waiver wire stuff. I really apologize. I got sick on you. But I'm trying not to short you on the information. I'm really doing my best here. Tomorrow maybe I've got about 6 more games to watch, so that may be what tomorrow is. It may be just sort of a day of recovery. Probably won't see any content or a podcast tomorrow, but I will be doing my due diligence, sitting there with my cup of warm tea, with my Apple TV, skipping through these games, getting as much film in my head as I can get. But once again, I want to thank all you guys for downloading this podcast as much as you have been. It's exciting for me that we've got more people than we had last year. And I'm glad you guys are liking it. For those of you who have sent donations, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. As I said before, you know, the money is nice. It's not a lot, but it's nice. But just the fact that you guys want to help puts a little wind in my sails. For those of you who want to donate, the button's easy to find. It's right there on the homepage. But again, the whole idea with donations to this site is that I want to provide something to you. So for those of you who want to wait until your season's done to decide how much you want to tip Rotobon, I'm totally cool with that. So don't feel like I'm trying to push you guys to send me money today or something. It's not like that. And then for those of you who aren't in a position to donate, also, I understand, man. It's a tough world out there. If you want to help out and not donate, giving me a rating on whatever platform you listen to can help a lot. If you have a second to put in a little written review, a couple sentences, why you like the pod, that helps too. So once again, I want to thank you guys. We're at the 50-minute mark. Thank you for listening to the Rotobomb podcast. Go out and kill it tonight in waivers. Be aggressive, because I know some of us have to be. Don't go out there and, you know, chicken shit around with your ads. If you need a guy, throw in 5 extra $10 and get them. For those of you who might be in a bad spot, you're 0-3 or something like that, you need a little help, feel free to hit me up on Twitter. If you want to throw me a screenshot of your roster and potential trade, potential waiver wire ads you're looking at, I will put in some time every day on that. And we will be back Thursday, as always, with lineup rankings. No matter how sick I am, there will be lineup rankings. And on Friday, we're going to have the pod with Jim and I and WEEI. We'll have a DFS podcast on Saturday. We're really just getting heated up, man. It's only week 3. So again, go out and kick ass tonight, and I'll see you guys on Thursday. And thanks, as always, for listening.
Oh, yes, indeed. It's fun time. Fun time. Stop!
Shoo, 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 shoo.